So if I asked you to write down, flip over your notes and begin to write down three or four things in your life that don't have the strength or the health or the energy or the place of priority in your life that you know they need to have. I'm confident that every one of us could do that. Maybe it's in your marriage, maybe it's in your finances, maybe where you're at in your career, your own emotional or physical, spiritual health. Or maybe it would be easier for you to write down a few things, maybe even a longer list of things that are draining you, draining your time and your energy. When they drain your time and your energy, it takes a toll emotionally and it's draining your happiness. When your happiness is gone, you feel disrupted emotionally and your peace is drained. And then you are listless and your energy and your strength seems to be gone. And it's, I'm guessing, probably not things that are big villains or monsters. It's no single person usually. It's no single thing. It's just a lot of smaller things that are just these, just enough of them, circumstances and situations and everyday people, everyday challenges that are just draining you in the course of a normal day. You just think, I can't seem to get through a day without something draining me. Without something discouraging me, without something frustrating me, without something setting me off course from reaching my potential from that day. And if you have enough of those days in a row, you kind of get to a place in your life where you just think, is this what life is? Do I just keep doing this over and over and over again? Is this all that I have to look forward to for the rest of my life? Now, here's maybe a more important question. If I asked you to tell me the three or four top boundaries that are clearly set and regularly guarded in your life to protect your peace, could you give me quickly three or four of your top boundaries that you say, these aren't all of them, but these are, I this, and I don't do this, and I do this, and I don't do this. And I'm going to posit, I'm going to guess, and I'm going to propose that you can more easily come up with what's draining you than you can come up with what's guarded in your life to protect you from being drained. And what I mean by that is not to discourage you, but to challenge you that maybe the things that are draining you, maybe the things that are discouraging you, maybe the 3, 4, 10, 15 things that are happening throughout the day are happening because you and I have neglected to set the kind of healthy boundaries in our life that keep us from experiencing so many of the things that we don't necessarily have to experience. Now, I know that when I challenge this kind of thing and you just say, Pastor Chris, seriously, it'd be great, but if you want to know the truth, it's work. Work is the number one thing that drains me and discourages me, and I lost my joy and my energy, and I don't have peace in my life because of work, and I can't very well tell my boss that I have boundaries. I'm sorry. I can't afford to lose my job. I can't set boundaries for work. Or you might say, oh boy, boundaries, that'd be great. How do I explain boundaries to my three-year-old? How do I set boundaries for my kids? And my kids have school projects, and they have homework, and they have soccer, and they have crazy schedules, and they have all of this going on, and to keep my household running, who do I set boundaries with there? And maybe you would just say, my life honestly is just crazy. I mean, it's not one thing, it's all these things. And truthfully, it's emotional and it's physical and it's mental and it's spiritual. And what I don't what I don't know where I would begin to set those boundaries. I mean, I'm depleted in all those areas, and I can't say no to people that I'm helping. I mean, I thought the whole purpose of us being followers of Christ was to do good works that God planned for us to do. So do I stop doing good for people because they need me? I can't say no to those I love. I mean, my elderly parents are in need and I have to be there for them, and my kids are in need, and I have a disabled neighbor who their kids don't live anywhere nearby and don't really seem to care for them, so I'm taking care of them and I'm doing good. Am I supposed to stop doing good so that I can set boundaries in my life? I get it. I genuinely get it. Because I have all of those similar types of things in my life. And I'll just tell you, for those looking forward to your kids getting more independent and maybe moving out of the house, it doesn't get easier being a parent. You have just less say-so. So now you have all these opinions you get to do nothing with, right? You have all this great parenting advice that you have to just keep to yourself. And so you and your spouse just give those parenting things back and forth to each other. I know. I wish they just, I mean, if they just asked us, we would tell them how they're supposed to do this right. I get it. Your life is miserable because you're special. I'm not even being sarcastic or being facetious. You have special circumstances. You have certain situations, certain circumstances, certain challenges, certain demands on your life that require you to be present. I get it. Sometimes there's no one else that can do maybe what you do, or at least that's kind of what we start feeling like, right? There's no one else who can take on our responsibilities. And maybe by setting boundaries, it means that we have to forego some of those responsibilities. And it feels like that would be negligent and irresponsible and unloving. So let me read you a story really quick from the book of Exodus. And this is in the second book of the Old Testament. And the narrative is assumed to be written by Moses. Okay, so it's in your notes. Of course, it's in your Bible. It's going to be on the screens. The next day Moses had the special job of judging the people. And I love that, because when you know that it's Moses writing this, it's funny that he's like, it was very special, very important job of judging the people. And it didn't mean judging in a condemning way. It meant, as a judge does, weighs the evidence and makes rulings. There were so many people that they had to stand before him all day. In other words, there were lines and lines of people that had to wait all day just to see him. Jethro, who was Moses' father-in-law, saw Moses judging the people, and he asked, why are you doing this? Why are you the only judge? And why do people come to you all day? Why does this just go on in perpetuity, every day, all day? Then Moses said to his father-in-law, the people come to me and ask for God's decision for their problem. Moses was very sensitive to the voice of God, and people trusted him to hear from God and help them in their decision-making. If people have an argument, they come to me and decide which person is right. So when people were making decisions, they trusted Moses' voice to hear from God. And when people were in a fight, they trusted him to make a decision and they would respect it. In this way, I teach people God's laws and teachings. That's a good thing. But Moses' father-in-law said to him, this isn't the right way to do this. It is too much work for you to do alone, and you cannot do this job by yourself. It wears you out, and listen, and it makes the people tired too. Now listen to me. Let me give you some advice, and I pray God will be with you. I'm going to pray God helps you with this. You should continue listening to the problems of the people, and you should continue to speak. I'm not telling you to give up what your role is. You should explain God's laws and teachings to the people. That's your role. Warn them not to break the laws. Tell them the right way to live by what they should do. But you should also choose some of the people to be judges and leaders. Choose good men you can trust, men who respect God. Choose men who will not change their decisions for money. They're not corrupt. Make these men rulers over people. There should be rulers over 1,000 people, 100 people, 50 people, and then over 10 people. He even gave them a game plan on how to break these down. You'll have a CEO, you'll have a mid-level management, you'll have lower-level management. Let these rulers judge the people. And if there's a very important case, then they can come to you and let you decide what to do. But they can decide all the other cases themselves. In this way, these men will share your work with you, and it will be easier for you to lead the people. And if you do this as God directs you, then you will be able to do your job without, listen, tiring yourself out, and the people can still have all their problems solved before they return home. So Moses did what Jethro told him. Now, I don't know if you were able to kind of do it mentally as you were hearing that, but there's three parts to that story. There's a beginning, the middle, and the end, and here's the beginning. There was a big problem. Moses had a job to do, but he wasn't doing it well. It was exhausting him, and it was exhausting people. It was totally inefficient. Moses had no boundaries in his life, and because of that, he had no peace in his life. Then in the middle, there was some really good godly advice from his father-in-law to establish boundaries that would make what he did, the important things he did, more efficient, more effective, and protect him and others from that frustration. And then at the end, it shows the fruit of making that. Then you will be much happier, healthier, there'll be peace restored to your life, and the people will still get everything they need. And I want to challenge you, I don't want to underestimate the importance of everything you do. You don't have to defend to me that you're important. You are. You don't have to defend to me that what you do in your family, at work, in your emotional life, your spiritual life, in your marriage, and your finances, that what you do matters. It absolutely matters. Everything you do is important. It's impacting not only your life, but other people's lives as well. You are important. And what you do is important. And it doesn't have to be a judge over many. It doesn't have to take place on a stage. You don't have to have a title. You don't have to have a position. You don't have to get paid for it, for what you do to be important. But I want you to hear this. Everything you do, God meant for it to be a blessing not only to you, but to others as well. And that can't happen if you don't have godly boundaries in your life to protect you and others from things going the way they're not supposed to go. And so we're going to talk about the importance of a well-established boundary in your life. Take out your notes if you don't already have them out. Number one, I need well-placed boundaries in my life because they help me protect the core of who I am and everything I do. So here's a question. What's more important, a beating heart or a functioning brain? Yeah, it's a little bit of a trick question. You can't have one without the other. If I were to take your beating heart, it would starve your brain of oxygen and you'd be dead pretty quickly, right? But if you didn't have a functioning brain, you might have a living body because the heart beats on its own electrical system, essentially. It doesn't have to have the brain to function. Your heart can continue to beat without your brain, but you would be a vegetative physical being that has no purpose, no movement. They call it vegetative because though it's living, it doesn't have autonomy. It can't do anything in and of itself. So that would not be a life either. And maybe that's why the Bible uses our minds and our hearts interchangeably, because when it translates to say you should do this in your heart or in your heart, it really means in your mind, because as we know, our hearts are just this physical muscle that has electrical impulses that provides oxygen. But when the Bible talks about it, our heart, or when we do, like you broke my heart, we don't mean that literally, like you hurt and wounded my physical heart. We mean the core of who we are was affected by you, but that all takes place in our minds. And so I want you to hear this in Philippians 4, 6 through 7, in the importance of protecting the core of who we are. Don't worry about anything. Worry, by the way, is the enemy of peace. You can't house peace and worry, anxiety and worry, and you can't have those coexist. They can't share a space with peace. About everything, tell God your needs, and don't forget to thank him for his answers. Any answer, by the way, not just the answer you were hoping for. If you do this, you'll experience God's what? Thank you for the two of you that got it. God's peace, thank you. Seven of you now. And which is far more wonderful than the human mind can understand. God's peace is so much better than any peace you and I can generate. His peace will keep your thoughts and your hearts quiet and at rest as you trust in Jesus. Can I tell you that the work of God is this, to provide for you an existence that stays within peace and rest as we trust in Christ, that we don't worry, that we're in perpetual trust of God. God's got this. God has it. No matter what news comes along, no matter what circumstance comes along, no matter what crisis comes along, no matter what upset in our life comes along, we just stay in this place of peace because it exists right here. It doesn't exist here. It'll never exist. Peace will never exist out here. There are some determined to disrupt peace. If you don't believe that governments and rulers intentionally start wars to meet objectives that have nothing to do with peace, that have nothing to do with safety, that have nothing to do with anything, I pray God's teaching over your mind. If you believe that there are people that are determined to constantly put war and disruption and anxiety and worry into our lives, but if you stay here and you're in peace, you are at rest in that. You just sit back. We were eating around the table last night. We did kind of our Mother's Day celebration. My parents were over, and all the kids, and we were just sitting around, and we have this thing that we do where we pull out this stack of cards, and somebody reads a question, and we all give an answer. You know, what's the most overrated movie, and things like that, and everybody has their opinions on it. And I started that story with a point in mind, and I'm like, did I take my Adderall this morning? And I did, and that's terrifying, and Lisa's telling me I should up my dosage. Well, let's just pretend I didn't start that story, and maybe later I'll go, I remembered it. And so God wants that work to take place in our life. And listen, where does that work take place? It doesn't take place in scheduling. It doesn't take place in finances. It doesn't take place in all the areas that we count on and rely on in order to... We think we can add order by simply putting things that feel out of order back into order, and that's not how it works. There has to be a work at the core of who we are, what we think, how we think. Listen to what it says in Proverbs 4:23. It says, be very careful to keep your mind safe, protected. The thoughts that you think make you the person that you are. As a man thinks, so is he. You and I are the product of what this says. If we believe that the world is in crisis, if we believe that there is no peace, if we believe that things don't get better, if we believe that God doesn't have things in control, if we believe our marriage is going to end, if we believe our finances are headed for bankruptcy, if we believe any of that, can I tell you that the course of your life will follow what you believe? And if what you believe determines who you are, your heart determines what you do, and when you do that, it directs the course of your life. Listen to Proverbs 4:23 as it says this, guard your heart above all else, for it determines the course of your life. That's the same passage, right? It just says it a little bit differently. It determines the course of your life. Number two is this: I need well-placed boundaries in my life because they help me keep doing good things for others without doing harm to myself. One of the reasons we have such difficulty committing ourselves to doing more for people is because we've seen the price tag of doing more for people. We've seen people take it for granted. I stopped by Starbucks this morning. I'm getting into coffee. I'm starting with iced coffee because it's more desserty, right? And lots of chocolate in there and cream and things like that, and it's very sugary, and I'm not committed yet because I usually feel sick for the rest of the day, so why you guys do it is beyond me. But anyway, the point is I held a door. It wasn't a they were right there and I just held it open. There would have been very little effort in that. It was a hold it and wait for them. Wait where I was being delayed in getting to the counter and making my order and getting here on time. No thank you. No nod, no appreciation whatsoever. If I could go back in time, I would not hold the door for them, right? I would not give my time. I just thought, that's what I get for being a nice guy. I'm such a nice guy. Why would I, why am I always the nice guy, right? Why am I always doing, I'm giving, I'm a giver. What can I say? I'm a giver. So we've seen it. We've seen doing good things for people. I think I've told you this story before. Lisa and I were out, and we saw this homeless guy that is frequently in Lincoln, but he walks all the way to Rockland and Roseville as well. And I actually know his name. I've talked to him, had long conversations with him. And he's very, very bright, but it's clear he also has mental health problems. And but I have a great deal of compassion for him. And I went in, we had stopped, I wanted to get a soda, and we stopped, and it was a quickie convenience mart gas station type deal. And he was sitting over in the shade, and I went inside, and I bought him a deli sandwich, and I bought him chips, and I bought him a big drink. And I went out, and I handed it to him, and I said, hey, here you go. And he goes, no thanks. And I go, oh, it's a sandwich and chips and soda. And he goes, I already ate. And I go, yeah, there's another meal coming up later. This was like lunchtime. I was like, dinner. It's a dinner. Keep it around for dinner. I'm sure it'll be fine. He's all, I'm good. And Lisa's waiting in the car, and I get back, and I come back. I was so defeated. It was like Charlie Brown music, and I was like walking back. She's all, what happened? I was like, he's good. He doesn't need my food. I was like so upset that my good deed went ungooded. Like I didn't get anything, right? So we get exhausted doing good things for people without rewards. And in our marriages and in our finances and everything else takes a back seat because we're giving. I was brought up in an era of ministry, and the mentors I was raised under, they taught us church comes first. The church, you come before us. Your marriages, your crisis, your sickness, your issues, everything happening in your life is the priority of our life. When your marriage is in crisis, I leave my family and come to rescue yours. Because Jesus gave his life for the church, and we should lead as Christ led. These well-intentioned men only taught half of the equation, though. Jesus, having taken the form of man, experienced all the same things that drain us and that exhaust us and that frustrate us and that potentially steal our peace. And because of that, Jesus set boundaries that protected his ability to give to others without depleting himself. Listen to what it says in Mark 1:35. It says, welcome to Summit. You can start here. The next morning, Jesus woke up very early. One thing I don't have in common with Jesus. He left the house while it was still dark, and he went to a place where he could be, what? Alone and pray. Jesus understood the importance of getting away from others to replenish his soul. To spend time with God, to focus on a relationship here that he could not do when focusing on people over here. Regularly getting away from others is essential for becoming and growing and staying the individual that God has created us to be. And Jesus taught his own disciples how to do this as well. Mark 6:31 says this, Jesus and his followers were in a very busy place, very busy time, lots and lots of demands on them. There were so many people that he and his followers did not even have time to eat. You've had those days, 4 o'clock, and you still haven't had lunch. And he said to them, his disciples, come with me and we'll go to a quiet place to be alone, and there we will get some rest. Jesus understood that you can't maintain this kind, you can't keep helping people, and it exhausts you physically, which affects you spiritually and emotionally as well, and ultimately that's going to affect you relationally and financially and every other way. Jesus said, we've got to pull back. While they were not with people, they could not help people, but they could not continue to help people unless they helped themselves by refreshing and renewing and recharging. You have to do that for yourself. Spiritual and emotional recovery is so important that God made it one of the 10 must-do things in your life. Right? You ever get online, it's like 10 things to do at Disneyland. And you're like, oh, okay. And you open it up and it's like, pay your park admission. Get a drink. You're like, I know all this already. You really want something to like, wow, I didn't know this. The 10 things that God said, this is what you must do. He said this to Israel. You must not murder people. People are like, oh, okay, interesting. You must not sleep with somebody else's spouse. And they're like, okay, keep going. One of the things that he said was, you must rest. Exodus 20:8-10 says this, you and your family are to remember, honor, set aside the Sabbath. Set it apart and keep it holy. Holy means set apart for the purposes of God. You have 6 days to do all your work, but the seventh is the day to be different. It is the Sabbath of the eternal, your God. Keep it holy by not doing any work. Not you, not your sons, not your daughters, your male and female servants, your livestock, or any outsiders living among you. He said it's so important that you should set a culture in your life. Anyone you have influence over, you should demand as well for them that, listen, we give a day to God. We don't do things that drain us. We don't do things that pull. We don't do anything that depletes. We need to recharge. God rested on the seventh day without the need to do so, but rather as a demonstration of the importance to do so, because God took that opportunity to reflect on his creation. You can't reflect when you're in the midst of doing everything. Jesus brought this back up in Mark 2:27 when he was addressing Pharisees who were abusing the Sabbath and making it all about law, making it about rigid rules. And he said this, God wanted to help people, so that's why he made a day for them when they should rest. God set aside a day for people. He did not make people so that they could keep the laws about the day of rest. In other words, God didn't mean for the Sabbath to be another thing that exhausted you and depleted you. You shouldn't be here because you feel a sense of obligation. You shouldn't be pulling back and resting because you feel that it's the lawful thing to do. You should do it because it's the good thing to do for you. You need to be recharged. You need to be refreshed. You need to sit and let somebody speak words of encouragement over you. And you need to provide an atmosphere and a culture in your life that create that as well. And the third and finally is this, I need a well-placed boundary in my life because it helps me keep better score of my own wins and losses. So possibly the greatest danger of having any, or at least not enough, or poorly set boundaries, is that we have no measurement of whether or not the things that we're doing or not doing matter or don't matter in our lives. Does that make sense? That how could we possibly know whether things are going the way that they're supposed to unless we've established metrics by which to say, oh, this is the way it's supposed to be going, or this is definitely not the way it's supposed to be going. Wait a second, this feels off, and I know it feels off because I put a line in the sand that says on this side, that's good, and on this side, that's dangerous, and it becomes a threat to my peace. So I want you to think of it this way. Maybe this helps understand it better. What if you had no measurement for money in your life? You weren't keeping track of money. And you had PG&E say, I know you think you paid your bill. We need $150 more. And you say, okay, I guess. Why? Because you're using more than we thought. Just go ahead and give us the, and your mortgage company said, hey, we're just, I know we had agreed to this as your mortgage payment, but because things are different for us, we need to do that. And you go, oh, okay, I guess I really don't. And you just keep spending. You're not tracking really your spending. And you find out that eventually you have nothing left because everyone else has a purpose and a need and a rule for your money, but you don't have any for yourself. You can see how that would end poorly, right? You don't have any boundaries set up, but you have passwords and you have account alerts that I have it on all mine that if a card charge on the debit card goes more than a certain amount, it alerts me and says, this was above the alert that you sent. It helps me know whether what I have, what's valuable to me, is being used in the right way or whether or not someone's trying to exploit that. Somebody's trying to get what's valuable to me because it's valuable to them too. And can I tell you that you are valuable to people? You're valuable to advertisers. You're valuable to companies. That's why that all of them are tracking everything you do. Your Safeway rewards thing, your Amazon, your phones are constantly listening for you to say something, and then all of a sudden all these ads come up because you are a data point in which they can exploit and get something they want from you, which is, of course, money. Right? People are also sensitive that you might have time and that you might have an empathetic ear and that you might be one of those people after everyone else has set a boundary with them, you seem to be the one that will give them time at midnight and they can call you and vent out. And I used to do this. I would meet with people because they'd say they need to meet and we'd sit down and they would pour out their thing and I'd be like, oh gosh, okay. Here's what I would suggest you do. Go and do this and this, and this is going to be a hard thing to do, and go and do this. And then 2 weeks later, hey, PC, can I meet with you again? And I'd say, oh, yeah, absolutely. And they'd come, and they'd tell me all this stuff that was going on, and I'd say, oh, gosh, I'm so sorry. Okay, so I want to rewind. Did you do, so the stuff we talked about last time, did any of that happen? Well, no, because, and they would, and I'd start realizing, oh, wait a second. We're not here because you want help. We're here because you found someone that will listen to your story and let you keep being the hero of the story while everyone else is the villain. You need an ally in your corner. You need to be able to say, I've told my pastor this and he agreed with me. And so I started saying, okay, listen, hey, we're gonna hit a hard stop. Do the things I talked about in the first time together, and then once you've done those, come back and we'll regroup and we can talk about what's next. But it doesn't feel productive for us to keep meeting if you're not ready to take those steps yet. And guess what? I didn't get any more phone calls from them, right? We need to make sure, just like in our bank account, we've got more coming in than's going out. Because you can't overspend. Is PG&E necessary? Is your mortgage necessary? Yeah, there's needs for things to go out. But in your life, there should never be a need for more to go out than comes in. You have to be a good scorekeeper. Listen to what it says, Galatians 6, 2 through 5. Shoulder each other. This is interesting because Paul establishes a principle, and I want to, before I read this, I want to say what the principle is. He says we are responsible to each other, not for each other. And there's a big difference because he does this sandwich that doesn't seem to make sense unless you read it with that lens. Shoulder each other's burdens, and then you will live as the law of the anointed teaches us. Don't take this opportunity to think you're better than those who slip because you aren't. You're not better. then you become the fool and deceive even yourself. Examine your own works, so that if you are proud, it will be because of your own accomplishments and not somebody else's. And each person has his or her own burden to bear and story to write. Here's what Paul says. You are responsible to help other people out. What you can't do, though, is judge them because of the need in their life. That you don't have that need. I didn't screw up like this. I would have never made this mistake. I wouldn't have gotten myself in this position. God wants us shouldering each other's because it helps bring humility and gratefulness into our life. It helps us give when we have something to give. When I have greater faith than you, it's easy for me to lend my faith. I can pray over your needs that you don't have the faith because maybe I'm full of faith at that moment. I don't have things depleting my faith. And when I have energy or time, or when I have compassion or empathy, or when even I have financial resources that help people, that's my obligation to do that. But I don't use that to feel superior to anyone, because what Paul says is, you are going to end up doing things in your life that you need others to do as well. You need others to shoulder and help. And listen, it's your responsibility to turn things around in your life, to make things better. You don't get to, just like you don't get to judge others for their choices, you don't get to put your bad decisions on the shoulders of anyone else. There are some important truths that we have to acknowledge and recognize in our life, and one of those is that we spend most of our time assessing the faults and the needs and the here's what you should be doing. We spend a lot of time doing that because it relieves us of the obligation to do those things for ourselves. We like setting standards for others. I saw somebody online last night misquote something out of Leviticus, which people love the book of Leviticus for doing that. They love to ignore all the other passages that says an adulterer should be stoned to death. And Jesus said, you've heard it said in the law, you should not commit adultery. But I tell you, if you lust after a woman in your mind or lust after a man in your mind, you have also committed adultery. So according to that, you should be stoned to death. Anyone that has ever looked lustfully at somebody else, we'd all be dead. We love misquoting. That's what we love to do, to set standards for everybody else, because it helps us feel better about us. Here's the problem. When you don't have any boundaries set for yourself, when you don't have a metric set for your own health, it looks perfect. But when you have a metric set for everybody else, they all look messed up. Listen to what Jesus said, and this is what we close on, Matthew 7:3-5. He says, why is it you see the dust? Why is it you can see this microscopic thing that truthfully God isn't that concerned about in somebody else's life, but you can't see what's in your own eye? Don't ignore the wooden plank. You know what a plank is? It's not a short board, it's a long board. Ignore the wooden plank in your eye while you criticize the speck of sawdust in your brother's eyelashes. That type of criticism and judgment is a sham. Remove the plank from your own eye, and then perhaps you'll be able to see clearly how you can help your brother flush out his sawdust. So even when we get to the point where we've got things removed from our lives that unobstruct our view of everybody else, when you see others, you see them in terms of how I can help them, not how I can judge them. So boundaries help your emotional, your physical, your spiritual, your marital, your financial, your relational. In every way, it affects your health. If you want to know why you're depleted, if you want to know why you're discouraged, if you want to know why you're exhausted, if you want to know why there is no peace, if you want to know why it's hard to trust God, if you want to know why it's hard to be inspired to give more and help more and do more in your life, it is because you have not put into place and well guarded the boundaries that make that possible. If Jesus needed boundaries, how much more do you and I? Boundaries aren't mean-spirited. Boundaries aren't punishment. Boundaries aren't bad. they will feel that way to certain people. But can I tell you that only triggers a knowledge and a wisdom that you recognize that boundaries only feel invasive to those who have none. To those who maintain their own boundaries, they go, oh, I get it. To those who keep their own backyard clean of dog poop, appreciate those who do the same. I have an elderly neighbor. I don't blame her for this. She's too old to do this. She's near 90 years old. And if it wasn't invasive and a breach of privacy, and I would go through her locked gate and go into her backyard and help clean up her little dog Cooper, obnoxious little thing that barks all day long. But she's deaf and can't hear him, so I don't get mad at her for that either. I get mad at Cooper and yell at him all the time. Shut up, Cooper! He stops for about 4 minutes. But Cooper's pooping, as dogs do. And it stays out there. We keep our yard free from the poop, right? We've got a clean yard. But I can smell her yard. So her yard infringes on our yard. So I only, listen, I appreciate someone who keeps good boundaries. And me keeping a clean yard enables me to recognize whose yard it is that stinks. But when I have poop in my own, I don't get to criticize Cooper's poop. You're like, what a wonderful Mother's Day message. This is so, so good. I'm going to call my adult children. They're going to go, what, you went to church? What was the Mother's Day message? Well, a lot of poop. There was a lot of poop talked about. Mom, are you saying poop? Yeah. You need boundaries. And it's going to be challenging because the people that have become accustomed to you not having them are going to feel like something's broken in you, that you are now doing what's healthy. But you need to, because you're meant to have a life of a protected, peace-filled, restful heart. Would you bow your heads and close your eyes? And we're just going to pray together. And I'm going to pray this over you. And I'm going to assume everyone in this room, and maybe especially moms, who I believe carry the emotional weight of so much of what men carry, maybe the financial, or maybe carry the physical, or maybe carry the logistical, or the we keep things kind of on their shelves, and we keep order, and we keep, but there's a lot of emotional and mental and spiritual things that are happening that don't fit on shelves, and they can't be put into a bank account, and they're not able to be fixed with screws or duct tape. They're left lingering out there, and mothers shoulder that. But I want you to hear this. You can do good and be good, and you can have good in your life. It's meant to be that way, but it's not meant to, the good things are not meant to deplete you and wear you out. You are not meant to do good for others and harm yourself. There's a way to do both, to keep you protected and still do what's good and still be good. Have that peace while turmoil happens all around you. Father, it's our prayer over every person in this room, and we pray especially for moms today, that there is a peace. Let us all feel just for a moment what it is to have peace beyond our ability to understand it, so we crave it. So we desire it like a drug, that we can't live without it. We have to get back to that peace. If we feel that peace being disrupted, we say, what boundary haven't I set? Or what boundary am I not guarding? What boundary has been breached? What hedge has a hole in it and has let that disruption leak in and steal my joy and steal my peace? Bring that to our minds every day. Bring that to our hearts every day, so that we can diligently repair, replace, rebuild, establish even new boundaries that protect that peace you mean for us, that you created us for. In Jesus' name, we accept it as if it's already happened. Giving you thanks now, everybody said, amen. God bless you guys.